Are you ready? Well, get set for some great ideas. Hi, this is Joel Weldon, and welcome to this exciting program of practical selling ideas, creative concepts, how-to techniques, and true stories and examples about real people. You are about to embark on an 11-hour listening journey, a listening journey that will take you to a higher level of selling professionalism. Now, this journey, however, is about a lot more than just listening. It's really about doing, because the ideas you'll hear in this program, when you act on them, will really make a difference. Now, how do I know that? I know because these ideas have made a difference for the thousands of people who have listened to them over the years on the original version of Sell It with the Million Dollar Attitude. You might have been one of them. And over the years, I've received hundreds of letters from listeners on how the ideas have helped them. But instead of reading you a whole bunch of letters, let me just summarize what most of them said. First, the importance of the stories. If it's true that one picture is worth 1,000 words, it's also true that one story is worth 1,000 pictures. That's because stories make the concepts and technical points come alive so that you can see how to put an idea into action. And stories hold your attention. And when told effectively, they keep you involved and interested. So many listeners wrote about the importance of the stories used in the program. They said that even though many of the stories had nothing to do with what they sold, they still remembered them, even though some of them were corny and old. And as a result, they remembered the principles those stories illustrated. And even though the ideas and principles weren't necessarily ones they hadn't heard before, they took on a whole new meaning because of the way they were tied to those stories and illustrations. Here's some of the stories that you'll be hearing in this brand new series. You'll hear about a gold nugget weighing over 200 pounds and a water ski lake in the desert. About a monkey brought in on a sales call and a movie star who insisted on shooting a scene 435 times to get it right. You'll hear about farmers and fishermen and a poker player who didn't even have to look at his cards to win. You'll hear stories about very common products like air conditioning units, roofing materials, plastic bags, refrigerators, and some not-so-common items like crisscross curtains, custom closets, green eggs, plant fertilizer, and apricots. And how a man went into a store to make a phone call and ended up leaving with a brand new sports car. You'll hear stories about well-known people like Albert Einstein, Jack LaLanne, and Geronimo, as well as a lot of people you've probably never heard of, like Jill Pierce, Johnny Chan, Martin Howie, Fred Ward, Shirley Smits, Dave Everett, Sam Fees, Don Raymond, Vernon Cavill, Marquita Andrews, Jerry Bubba Puckett, and Jim and Debbie Hayes. Sound interesting? How about a car worth $10 million and a diamond watch for just $3? Yes, you'll hear stories about carpets, cameras, and coffee, cushions, closets, and cookies. I can hardly wait to tell you all these true stories. Now back to those hundreds of letters that I've received from the listeners of the original version of Sell It and what they said. Without a doubt, the single most common reference in those many letters was from the seasoned sales pros on how they were reminded of the things that they had once done to become successful, but over the years they had stopped doing. And that as a result of these reminders, they started doing them again and became even more successful. Remember, the program you'll be listening to here is the new 21st Century Edition. It's totally revised and greatly expanded. In fact, it's more than doubled. There's lots of good ideas waiting for you here. So let's get started. Thrilling your customer is the theme of this first message. And I can assure you that the customer in this first story was indeed thrilled. Now, how can I be so certain? Well, because I was the customer. And even though my initial encounter with this amazing and wonderful salesperson lasted only 22 minutes, it has impacted my life more than any other encounter ever has that involved the salesperson and me as the prospect. And even though this experience took place many years ago, almost every detail and almost every word is still burned in my memory. Have you ever had such an experience? A seemingly ordinary encounter that could happen on any given day that leaves such an impact on you that your life is never the same again. If you've ever had that kind of experience, you know the feeling. And if you haven't as yet, I sure hope you will. In fact, that's one of the principles of selling you'll be hearing in these 12 messages, how you can impact others for the good. Now, you and I both know that one basic principle in selling is don't assume, unless you're almost 100% sure of that assumption. Well, I'm going to make an assumption about you. I'm going to assume that you've been in at least one taxi cab in your life. Fair assumption? Most likely you've been in dozens, maybe even hundreds of taxis. And if not, you've at least seen what it's like on a television show or in a movie. I've probably been in close to 1,000 taxi cabs since 1974 when my speaking career began, and I became a regular business traveler. Now, before I begin the story, a word of caution. Be careful not to prejudge what you're going to hear, because it's an ordinary common beginning that ended in an extraordinary way. As a matter of fact, once this amazing 22-minute encounter was over, I took out a piece of paper and wrote down exactly what happened, word for word, and then wrote down 12 specific things I learned from that experience. And when we finish the story, I'll share those 12 specifics with you. So be on the alert and see how many of them you pick up on. Okay, here we go with the first story. Come back with me in time as my invisible partner. This is a true story about an amazing taxi cab ride. The location? The airport in Memphis, Tennessee. The time? 5:20 on the evening of January 2nd, years ago. You and I step out of the American Airlines baggage claim area with two heavy suitcases loaded with materials for a seminar the next morning. We're looking for a taxi, but no cabs are there. Finally, we spot a dispatcher with a two-way radio. "Do you need a cab?" he says. "Well, remember, you're invisible." "Well, yes, I do," is my reply. So he calls in his radio to a separate holding area where the cabs are parked, so they don't cause congestion out front. Well, as we look down the street, what we see coming our way, oh no, not this beat-up taxi. Well, your reaction is just like mine. Why that cab? I mean, what'd we do to deserve this? Have you ever noticed how important first impressions can be in selling? Well, this first impression is far from positive. The car is dented, scratched, and pretty beat-up looking. But then, the driver stops the cab and leaps out. He doesn't just step out, he flies out. He runs, not walks, to the trunk hood, which he released from the inside, grabs it with his hand before it jerks to a stop in the open position. Walking towards me, he says with a grin, "Hello, and welcome to Memphis. Are these your bags?" "Well, yes," I say with some hesitation, since we're the only ones around, and the bags are sitting right next to me. He immediately grabs the bags, places them quickly but carefully in the trunk. Even though he's slender and not very powerful-looking, he lifts those heavy bags without flinching. He closes the trunk hood, runs to the passenger door, opens it like it's a limousine, and motions for me to enter. "You slip in with me." As we settle in the back seat, we're quickly impressed. There's new carpeting on the floor, new custom fabric on the seats. It's spotless and very comfortable. The driver runs around to his side, gets in quickly, pulls out of the traffic area, stops the car, turns around, extends his hand, and says, "My name is Willie Cooley, and yours, sir." Well, somewhat taken aback, I reply, "Joel Weldon," and shake his hand. Willie then says, "Mr. Weldon, is this your first trip to our fair city?" "Well, yes," I say, and he extends his hand again and says enthusiastically, "Well, welcome again." And then says, "Mr. Weldon, may I ask you another question?" "Well, sure, Willie, what do you want to know?" With a big smile, he says, "Where are we going?" "Well, the Hyatt Regency Hotel," I reply. "Well, I know just where it is," Willie says. "It should take us 20 to 25 minutes, depending on traffic. Mr. Weldon, do you need to work, or can we talk?" Again, not sure what to make of this unusual behavior, I hesitate momentarily. I mean, was he drunk, I thought. You see, he didn't speak like I'm speaking to you right now. He kind of slurred his words together as if he was drunk. Well, sensing my hesitation and concern, Willie says, "I'm not drunk, Mr. Weldon." He went on to explain that he had dental surgery and his top teeth had to be removed, and as a result, he sounded funny. Now, how did he know what I was thinking? He was using TLC. You've heard that acronym before in business, in customer service situations, and in selling. Tender, loving care, right? Well, that's certainly what most people think it means. But by the time you complete this program, you'll know that TLC really stands for Think Like a Customer. So for now, let's just say that Mr. Willie Cooley was a TLC pro. He was able to sense my hesitation, pick up on my concern, because he knew what I was hearing and thinking. And so he checked to make sure that I could understand him in spite of his temporary speech problem. Well, I said, "Sure, Willie, I can understand you, and yes, I do have time to talk." Now, let's stop right here for a minute. Does this sound like the ordinary cab drivers that you've met? Well, no, I don't think so. Willie was far from ordinary. He was enthusiastic and friendly at the curb. He was careful with the luggage. The interior of his cab was spotless. He introduced himself. He asked appropriate questions. Willie was a professional. He was immediately identifiable as unique in just those first few minutes. Now, how do your customers see you? What's their impression of you after you say hello and introduce yourself? Is it obvious that you're a professional, that you're unique? Well, Willie then asks, why are you going to the Hyatt Regency, Mr. Weldon? I'm conducting a seminar for Federal Express and their management team, Willie. He says he knows a lot of people with Federal Express and adds that it's an excellent organization. In fact, Willie says, that's their headquarters building just ahead on the left. He then went on to explain how Frederick Smith had founded Federal Express in 1971, but it took him 2 years to get the system running. He said by 1983, they were doing over $1 billion in sales, and they were the first U.S. corporation to go from zero to a billion in under 10 years. Willie then added that sometimes his friends at FedEx ship some unusual items. Like back in 1974, they shipped the shark that was used in the Jaws movie to Martha's Vineyard, a 13-foot shark packed in a 15-foot casket. They can ship almost anything, Willie says. A FedEx pilot even brought a snowball from Appleton, Wisconsin, to a sick child in Memphis, Tennessee. And they even shipped an entire windmill from Denmark. I'm sitting there writing all this down to work into my seminar the next day. Then Willie says, Mr. Weldon, can I ask you a personal question? At this point, I'm sold on Willie, so I smile and say, go ahead, Willie, what do you want to know? Well, I know you're married, Mr. Weldon, because I saw your wedding band, but do you have any children? Well, yes, I do, Willie. I have two daughters, Jill and Jenny. Willie comments about how wonderful it must be to have two girls, and then he tells me about his kids. With that, he picks up a leather folder off the seat next to him and hands it to me. Mr. Weldon, he says, do you know how to read a map? Well, sure I do, Willie. Okay, open up the folder to page 1, and you'll find a map of the Memphis area. Look in the lower left-hand corner, F9. See the airport there? Got it, I say. Willie then tells me to look for J8. That's our destination, the Hyatt Regency Hotel. He chuckles and says, now you know where you are and where you're going. He then goes on to reveal some fascinating facts about Memphis, its history, and the geography. And he verbally points out locations on the map as he talks. Then he tells me to flip to page 2. And as I do, he says, Graceland. Well, I'm a little confused at first because all I see are these pictures of what looks like a big estate with fancy rooms. Willie then says, Mr. Weldon, it's Graceland Mansion, Elvis Presley's home. Oh. Sure, I say. I mean, Graceland, that's where Elvis lived. That's right, Mr. Weldon, and since this is your first trip to Memphis and you have two daughters, it would be a shame not to go by and at least see Graceland so you can tell Jenny and Jill all about it. What do you say we just swing by? It's not far, and I'd be happy to give you a quick tour. I smile and say, no, Willie, I better pass. I want to check things out at the hotel and meet some of the people before my seminar tomorrow. So let's just go directly to the Hyatt. Well, without a moment's hesitation, he says, that's fine, Mr. Weldon. But that portrait of Elvis and that bumper sticker on the next page are mine, and you can't have them without going on the tour. And he starts laughing, and I start laughing. And then he says, flip to the next page. Well, for the next 15 minutes, Willie gives me a very descriptive tour of Memphis while I follow along with the maps and pictures in his folder. Pretty soon, we pull up in front of the Hyatt Regency, and because it's raining, Willie tells me to wait in the cab while he goes and gets Fred. Well, for a moment, I think he means Frederick Smith, CEO and founder of Federal Express. Well, Willie sees my startled expression and quickly says, oh, no, Fred's the bellman on duty today. He'll take care of you when I leave. Well, with that, Willie runs in, quickly reappears with the bellman, Fred. He puts my two bags on the bellman's cart, and as I step out of the cab, Willie says, this is Mr. Weldon. He's here to do an important seminar for Federal Express. Fred, take good care of him. And with that, the bellman welcomes me to the Hyatt Regency, says he'll meet me at the front desk. Well, pulling out my wallet, I turn back to Willie and say, how much do I owe you? Well, that'll be $10.50, Mr. Weldon, he replies. I look at my wallet, see I have a few 20s, a 10, a couple of singles, so I give Willie one of the 20s. He takes it, steps closer, holds it up, snaps the $20 bill in a unique, dramatic way, and says with a giant, toothless smile, Mr. Weldon, how much do you want back? Less my tip. Well, I can't help chuckling. It was just so disarming, so unique, so natural for Willie, the way he said it. I mean, certainly not high pressure or pushy. So I just said, give me back $5, Willie. He does, and as I'm putting the $5 back in my wallet, he says, well, thank you very much. And I said, no, Willie, thank you. This has been a great ride with you, and so much fun, too. Willie says, well, I'm glad. Now, Mr. Weldon, what time do you need me to be here tomorrow? Well, a bit confused, I said, what do you mean, Willie? Willie flashes a big smile, revealing his toothless top gum, and says, Mr. Weldon, there might not be any cabs out here tomorrow, and you've got to get back home, like you said. So I'll be here when you tell me. Well, I say, gee, Willie, I'm not sure about my flight time. So he says, check. So there we are in front of the Hyatt Regency, just under the canopy. I'm looking for my airline tickets back to Phoenix. Well, Willie, it looks like I've got a 3 o'clock flight tomorrow. Okay, Willie says, let's figure 45 minutes driving time at that time of the day to play it safe. How much time do you like to leave yourself before departure? Well, I say jokingly, because I fly a lot, I have a special arrangement with most of the airlines. If I'm not at the gate when they're ready to go, they just take off without me. Well, Willie laughs, and I laugh, and then I say, seriously, Willie, 45 minutes before departure. Willie then reaches into his pocket, pulls out a small appointment book, and says, okay, January 3rd, I need 45, you need 45, that's an hour and a half, so let's say 1:30 sharp. Mr. Weldon, would you be out here at 1:30 sharp, ready to go, if I'm here? You bet, Willie. Okay, Mr. Weldon, let's shake on it. And we shake. He pulls out a pen and records our appointment. 1:30, Hyatt Regency, Weldon to airport. Then he hands me his business card with his dispatch's number and his home phone number on the card and says, call me at home tonight if your plans change, Mr. Weldon. Of course, I say. But before you go, Willie, is it okay if I ask you a couple of questions? Well, sure, Willie says. Now, what would you have asked this amazing sales professional? Wasn't there something inconsistent with his professionalism? That's right. The poor first impression created by the exterior condition of his taxicab. So I said, how come somebody as professional as you, Willie, is driving around in this dented and scratched up taxi? Good question, Mr. Weldon. A lot of my first-time customers pick up on that, and it's simple. The company I represent and have for 22 years doesn't spend much money on the exterior cosmetic-type problems. They do provide a very good mechanical maintenance program on the brakes, tires, engine, and transmission. But they have a unique policy that the drivers can do what they want with the inside of the cabs. So I put in the new carpet and the new seat covers, because that's where you sit. And I don't worry about the outside. I control the inside. I learned a long time ago to control the controllables. Does that make sense, Mr. Weldon? Oh, wow. What another great example of TLC, thinking like a customer. Well, sure does, Willie. Now my second question for you. How come a guy as professional as you is driving a taxi? Mr. Weldon, another good question. It's simple. I love it. It gives me the freedom to run my day, and I make really good money. And I meet wonderful and interesting people. Plus, I have a few other businesses I started with the money I've made driving a taxi. That's why my kids are in college, so they can run those businesses for me. You got any other questions, Mr. Weldon? Well, no, I said, that's it, Willie. And with that, away drives Mr. Willie Cooley, cab driver extraordinaire. Now, since you're still with me, let's stop here before we go into the hotel and register. Are you impressed with Willie? Well, you should be. What you've just witnessed is one of the best examples of professionalism and professional selling I've ever experienced. Remember at the beginning of this message, I mentioned that the purpose of each story is to illustrate a principle of professional selling. And this 22-minute encounter with Willie resulted in my writing down 12 specific ideas. Now, if you were going to write down the specific things you experienced or thought of on that taxi ride, what would they be? What were some of the things that you noticed that Willie did that you could adapt to your work as a sales professional? Well, here's what I wrote down. See if these are the same ones that you thought of. Let me read you the 12 specific things, and then we'll come back and discuss them one by one. Number one, preparation. Number two, enthusiasm. Number three, pride. Number four, friendliness. Five was responsibility, and six was professionalism. Seven was questions. Eight was presentation book. Nine, knowledge. 10, objections. 11, closing. And finally, and most importantly, number 12, doubling his business. In addition to those 12 specific points, there were three other important philosophical concepts that struck me that chilly January 2nd, many years ago. First, that jobs don't have futures, only people do. It's not the territory you're in or the products you sell. Your income and your success is really up to you. Next, that professionalism is gained by performance and not title. No matter what your business card says, sales rep or sales consultant, territory rep or territory manager, or taxi driver, you can bring it to its highest level by the way you do what you do. And third, it's the little things you do. That's what people notice and remember. When you do lots of little things extremely well, the overall impact can be extraordinary, and your customers are thrilled. Okay, let's go over that list of 12 specifics one by one. Number one, Willie was prepared. He gassed his taxi, cleaned the inside, organized his presentation book, checked the driving conditions, and was both physically and mentally set to sell and provide exceptional service to his customer. How well prepared are you for your sales presentations? Do you check and recheck so you have everything you'll need? You prepare most for what you love the most, so decide to love what you do or do something else. Number two, Willie had enthusiasm. The minute he saw his customer, he leaped from the front seat with energy, purpose, excitement, and enthusiasm. He was thrilled to work and to serve. How do your customers see you? Do you show your enthusiasm? Do you move with purpose, energy, and speed? You know, the very word enthusiasm evokes excitement. It comes from the Greek word entheos, which means God possessed or God within. Wow! Now that's something to express to your customers and your prospects. Enthusiasm. Number three, Willie had pride. His taxi cab had new carpets, special seat covers, and was spotless inside because of the pride he took in his work and himself. How's your appearance? How about your materials, visuals, samples, or your shoes? Number four, Willie was friendly. With a big warm smile and a firm and friendly handshake, he said, "Welcome to Memphis. My name is Willie Cooley, and yours." How do you greet your customers and prospects? A smile is almost always appropriate, costs so little to give and pays you back in so many ways. How about your handshaking? In some industries and businesses, it's a binding commitment. It can even be a closing tool to get you to the next level of the sale. Okay, let's shake on it. That means it's a done deal. Number five, Willie took responsibility. He didn't complain about the outside of his taxi or his company. He just improved the inside and controlled the controllables. Follow Willie's example, and don't badmouth your company or your leadership team. You know, so often the ordinary ones do. If Willie was just an ordinary taxi driver, he might have said something like this. Gee, you know, my cab company president is so cheap. You'd think after 22 years of driving for him, he'd fix up the outside of the cab. Oh, not him. What a jerk. You know, that kind of talk about your organization diminishes your prospect's respect for both the company and you. So if you can't say something positive, don't say anything at all. Number six, Willie was professional. He knew what he was doing, why he was doing it, and he did it extremely well. He picked up on the little things, like spotting my wedding ring, remembering not only my name, my daughter's names, and my client's names, but he used them too. How good are you at picking up on the little things, remembering them, and using them? Being a pro means capturing that information, then storing it, so you can refer to it later on to build your relationship. Number seven, Willie asked questions. He didn't assume anything. He checked where I was going, my availability and interest in talking, how familiar I was with reading a map. Not only did he ask excellent questions, he listened to my responses and remembered them. So how good are you at qualifying your prospects? Oh, message number five is going to discuss qualifying in great detail. Oh, you're going to get a lot out of that session. You're going to hear about an elephant sales pro, a swimming coach who couldn't swim, selling a forklift, ordering a hamburger, a ride on a New York City subway train, and Lou Wright's power question. Oh, you're going to love that session. Okay, can you repeat those six stories that I just said that you're going to hear in message number... What was that message number? If you remember all seven pieces of information, you're a good listener. Okay, stop the message now and see if you can remember what the six stories are going to be on message... What was that number again? Go ahead, pause it. Okay, if you said elephant sales pro, swimming coach who couldn't swim, selling a forklift, ordering a hamburger, riding the New York subway, and Lou Wright's power question, all on message number five, then you're a great listener. Congratulations. If not, you need to practice focusing on what you hear. Number 8, Willie used a presentation book. He knew the power of visual aids, getting the customer's participation, and how to separate himself from the ordinary cab driver. Do you use visuals? Do you have a presentation book like Willie did? Oh, there's such power in showing what you're saying. The Wharton Center for Research and the University of Minnesota did a research study on the benefits of visuals to reinforce spoken communications. Here are their findings. Visuals increased attention by 7.5%, comprehension by 8.5%, perception by 10.1%, retention by 11.2%. Now that's impressive, right? Well, nowhere near as impressive as this last statistic. Visuals used in a presentation increase action by 43%. Now that's truly impressive. So use visuals because the eyes are the windows to the mind. You know this is true when you hear a prospect say, you know, I see what you mean. Or, oh, I got the picture. Well, yes, that's clear, I see. Number 9, Willie had knowledge. He knew about Federal Express, its history and founder. He knew about the driving time from the airport. He even knew the bellman's name at the Hyatt Regency that afternoon. How much do you know about your own company, your industry, your products, your competition, and most of all, your customers? Knowledge is power when you use it, and Willie sure used his. Number 10, Willie knew about objections. You know, when I answered no to the side trip to see Graceland and get that Elvis picture, he smiled and joked about it. His positive, enthusiastic demeanor didn't change. Wow, that was impressive. How do you respond to objections? Well, get set. Two entire messages in this series will deal with just that, objections. Number 11, Willie knew about closing. No high pressure, no fear, no half-hearted effort. He expected the extra tip and claimed it confidently and creatively. How much do you want back? Less my tip. Oh, I'll never forget that. So when it comes to your closing ability, how do you rate? As good as Willie? Well, if you need some improving in that area, get set for sessions 7 and 8, both on the subject of closing. Almost 2 hours of specifics for you on that subject. And finally, point number 12 of my Willie Cooley experience. Willie knew how to double business. By giving such exceptional first-time service, he claimed the opportunity at hand and arranged for the return ride at 1:30 on January 3rd. He wrote down the time, used the handshake to confirm the business agreement. That one simple action enabled Willie to double his business. Wow! How simple, and yet how profound. The simple principle of selling more to your existing customers. Now the big question, how would you like to double your sales? That's right, how would you like to double your sales? You can, if you do what Willie did. After he had completed one purchase for $10.50 plus the $4.50 tip, which, by the way, was a 43% tip, Willie then doubled his business by arranging for the second cab ride. Now, you and I know that this is not a new idea. I mean, cab drivers must realize that people who take a cab to one place usually need to take one back again, especially from an airport to a hotel. But how many cab drivers have ever made that offer to you? Maybe one or two. And up until that time, no one but Willie had ever made that offer to me. And that's one of the most important concepts presented in this program. It's not what you know, it's what you do that counts. So as you listen to each message, keep in mind that although you may have heard some of these concepts before, and in spite of the dramatic changes in the way the world is doing business in the 21st century with e-commerce and the internet, the principles of selling don't change very much. So when you find yourself saying, I've heard that before, quickly add these two important questions. Yes, I've heard it, but am I using it? And if I am using it, how can I improve on it? Those principles of selling that you'll be hearing in this program are built on time-tested and proven concepts, and they work, but not necessarily every time with every person in every situation. You know, so often I hear sales managers, corporate executives, or professional speakers, sales trainers, and business consultants use phrases like this. This will work every time. Or, no one ever bought without answering this one question first. Or, all buyers do this. Hey, you know very well that when it comes to selling techniques, people's behavior, and just plain old human nature, there are very few absolutes. So I'm going to be careful to avoid the words like always and never. In reality, it's usually or sometimes. It's not all, it's most. It's not none, it's very few. Time-tested principles do work most of the time, but not necessarily all of the time. And they do apply to the majority of situations you'll find yourself in, but not necessarily every situation. Just wanted to make that clear. And I will absolutely avoid absolutes. You be careful, too, in your choice of words. In talking to your customers, avoid using the absolutes, like always, never, all, every time, everyone, no one. Yes, it's a little thing. But as you know, the little things can sometimes be the big things in selling. So as you listen to these 12 messages, you'll be hearing two types of ideas. You'll be hearing principles, and you'll be hearing specifics. And there's an important difference. A principle is a fundamental truth or a law upon which other ideas are based. A specific, on the other hand, is much more flexible and varied. It's how you personally choose to apply the principle based on your own unique situation, your market, your industry, your products, and your personality, your experience, and your current conditions. So as you listen to the principles discussed in these messages, only you can make those principles specific to you. That's your assignment. Listen to the stories and illustrations, identify the principles, and then apply those principles in a specific way to your situation. Here's an example. The principle of gravity. Gravity, as you know, is the pull of all bodies on the Earth's sphere towards the center of the Earth. Gravity is what keeps you from floating out into outer space right now. So let's use a specific example. I'm going to drop this pen that I have in my hand on the table in front of me. Okay, listen, hear it drop. Now, you apply that principle of gravity in your own specific way. You can drop a coin, a book, a shoe, a billfold. You can drop anything. No matter what it is, as long as it's not lighter than air, it'll head for the center of the Earth and most likely be stopped by the floor or a table or be caught in your hand. I mean, that's pretty simple, right? Another example is the principle of preparation, which states that the more prepared you are, the more relaxed you'll become. The more relaxed you become, the more confident you'll be, and the more effective your performance will be. You can see the principle applied in a specific way by watching a major league sports team practice. Take the National Football League. One of my former Sunday school students now plays in the NFL. Jeremy Brigham told me he has to practice 6 days a week, Tuesday's a day off, and that he puts in over 60 hours a week doing physical drills, conditioning himself, and studying his playbook. As a rookie, he had to practice 7 days a week, no Tuesdays off. Well, now as a non-rookie tight end, every play is videotaped. Every catch, every drop pass, every yard is recorded, both in practice and on game day. His coaches then watch the tape of every one of his practice plays with him, all for an event that lasts only 60 minutes on game day. And as an offensive player, that's less than 30 minutes of playing time because he's not in on the defensive plays. So over 60 hours of preparation for just a few minutes of actual football. Why? Because his coaches want him to be fully prepared both mentally and physically. Now that's my specific illustration of the principle of preparation. Now, most likely it has nothing to do with you. I mean, chances are you're not an NFL player and probably never will be. So how do you take that specific illustration and make the principle applied to you and your situation? Well, you could say to yourself, you know, if I spend as much time learning about that new product my company just launched as Jeremy Brigham is putting into his football job, I'm sure I'd be ready for my game day when I'm face to face with an important prospect. I'd be fully prepared to make that big play, that big sale. Now that's the specific, and that's your assignment. As you listen to these messages, create your own specific application based on the principles you're hearing. Now let's quickly look at what your entire program includes. This first message is about the Willy factor and thrilling your customers. Message number two is about how to take your selling to the next level so that you can join the top 1% club. Your third message explains how you can use a unique method of prospect identification or customer rating called 10 to Win. In message four, we'll discuss ways you can amaze your customer and find even better prospects. The next message, number five, has some great ideas on how to qualify your prospects by using powerful questions. And then number six is on selling the benefits, not just the features. Oh, you're going to love the shirt story in that one. Then the following two messages both deal entirely with closing. Closing concepts and closing strategies on message 7, and specific closing questions you can use on message number 8. Your ninth session is devoted to objections, how to recognize them and determine what they really mean. And number 10 is how to answer them and cash them. In message number 10, you're going to meet a guy who yelled, "You're a damn fool if you don't buy this right now." Well, you hear what happened. Message 11 gives you a proven plan for getting in front of even more highly qualified prospects and customers by generating referrals. In that message, you'll find out what the title of this entire series, Sell It with the $1 Million Attitude, really means. And finally, message number 12 will give you some important ideas on achieving even greater believability and trust, and specifics on how to sell value, not price. You'll also hear more about Willie Cooley on that last message. The ultimate objective of each session is to give you lots of practical ideas that you can use immediately to increase your closing percentage, to be of greater service to your customers, to earn even more money, and to have even more fun in your exciting and lucrative profession, selling. Sound good? Okay, let's continue with these three premises. Premise number 1, almost everyone sells. You sell yourself and your ideas. I hope you agree with that. Here's what the famous poet and writer Robert Louis Stevenson said back in 1883. Let me quote him. "Anytime two people meet, at least one of them is selling something. Everyone earns their living by selling." Now, that was way back in 1883. Today, in the 21st century, the United States government estimates that about 15.5 million people, that's about 12% of the workforce, can be officially classified as salespeople. But if you think about it, everybody really does have to sell themselves. Premise number 2. One of the best times to learn how to sell is when you're the customer or prospect. That's right. When you're buying something or being sold something by a salesperson, that's when you know exactly what the customer is thinking, feeling, and really saying, because you're the customer. And with a bit of inward reflection, you know what you're really thinking to yourself when you say to that salesperson, "You know, well, I think I need to think about it." Or, "You know, I want to look at a few others first." Because what you might really be thinking is, "You know, this is not what I'm looking for at all. It's just way overpriced. But, you know, the salesperson seems like a nice person. So I'll be kind and thoughtful by saying, I need to think about it." So invest the time to evaluate yourself as the customer. It's one of the best ways to learn how to sell others. And when you're the customer or the prospect, you can judge the impact on you of what the salesperson is saying and doing. I mean, does that make sense to you? Well, it sure did make sense to me years ago when I first heard it and I began using it. That's why you're going to hear so many examples on these messages of things I bought or invested in. It's this analysis of our own buying or not buying motivations that can help us understand selling and give you an insight into why other people buy or don't buy. And now premise number 3. Study and evaluate those who sell you. Evaluate their words and their actions. What was your first impression of them? How about their attitude and enthusiasm? What about their professionalism? What about their selling skills? Did they ask you effective questions? Did they listen, really listen to your responses? What about their product knowledge? How about their ability to sell benefits and not just features? What about price versus value? Did they pile on value or just emphasize the low price, the sale price, or discounts? How did they respond to your objections? What about asking you for the sale, their closing skill? How did they handle the details if you did buy from them? And what about following up and contacting you or servicing you after the sale? Again, that's why you'll be hearing so many examples of people I've met who have sold me things, and why so many of the examples are from right here in Arizona, where my family and I have lived since 1969. But you can begin your own collection. It pays off big time. In fact, if you get nothing else out of this entire series of messages, all 11 hours, except this one idea, it'll reap a huge profit from your investment of time in this program. So study yourself as the customer in everyday things. Things like ordering food from a server in a fine restaurant, buying auto, homeowners, or life insurance, picking out clothes in a department store, shopping online, purchasing appliances, computers, or an entertainment center, or maybe some power tools, buying or leasing a new car. Just check out your own purchases over the last 12 months and see how many opportunities you've had to learn how to sell even better. Now, sure, the nature of selling has changed. Gone are the days of Willie Loman, that tragic main character from Arthur Miller's classic Death of a Salesman. As a matter of fact, I was in New York City that year when the play reopened on Broadway 50 years after it was first performed. By the way, that time it starred Brian Dennehy as Willie Loman. Oh, what a great example of preparation on Dennehy's part. I mean, he really became that character. As you know, the 21st century has brought us increased globalization, a communications technology explosion, and internet commerce. And as we said before, the ability to sell almost anything as a commodity has struck fear into the hearts of many salespeople. Many buyers are no longer buying just because of loyalty and long-term relationships. Now business is being done in many cases on an evaluation basis of quality, price, and delivery. In some cases, sales force size has been cut, and cut dramatically. So what about you and your future in sales? Have no fear. No matter what technology brings, one basic truth in business, in the free enterprise environment, is that great salespeople will remain in high demand and will continue to be well compensated. As for the unprofessional ones, yes, they're going to be cast aside or bypassed. So your job is to just keep getting better and better at what you do. That's why I shared with you that true story about Willie Cooley. The ideas are not really new. They're very basic and mostly little things. Yet so few people do them as well as Willie did them. Even though Willie drove a taxi cab, and most likely you don't, you have a number of things in common with Willie. Like the need to be unique and to deal with lots of different types of people. People who are experienced, knowledgeable, and busy, and looking for value in a competitive marketplace. And what happened in Willie's taxi cab applies directly to you and your selling because the principles are the same. As we said during this brief 22-minute ride with Willie Cooley, almost every professional sales technique was illustrated. Which ones will you use? You know, it's action, not words. It's results, not just promises. Ideas are unlimited, but the winning sales professional takes the ideas and uses them. Now, let's go back to Memphis. It's January 3rd, and that morning as my seminar comes to an end, I'm particularly excited about riding in Willie's taxi cab again. The experience of the previous evening is still fresh in my mind as I anticipate my return ride to the airport at 1:30 that afternoon with positive expectancy. How do your present customers feel about seeing you again? Do they have positive expectancy about how you're going to help them, service them, and sell to them? After getting a quick lunch, checking out of the hotel, I notice the time is 1:20. I walk outside to the pickup area, and there's Willie's taxi cab. But no Willie. But as I get a little closer, I see there he is in the back seat, and you know what he's doing? He's down on the floor, cleaning the carpet with a small hand vacuum, and wiping off the seats with a damp rag. He looks up, sees me, and says, "Mr. Weldon, how did your seminar go with Federal Express?" Oh, wow! Not only does he remember my name and use it, he remembers the client's name. More thinking like a customer, TLC. Well, it went fine, Willie. He then runs to the trunk, pointing to my bags at the curb. He says, "Are these your bags, Mr. Weldon?" "Yes," I say, and he grabs my two bags and then stops with a puzzled look. "Mr. Weldon, these bags are much lighter today. You didn't forget anything, did you?" Wow! Talk about attention to the little things. "No, Willie," I say. "Yesterday they contained all the printed materials and cans of success. We gave them out at the seminar today." "Okay," he says, and I slide in. After Willie shuts the door for me, he runs around to his side, leaps in, drives the cab up to the stop sign at the corner, puts the car in park, turns around with a big smile, with no upper teeth, and says, "Mr. Weldon, today is your special day." I thought, my special day, what did I do? Was I the millionth passenger or something? Willie sees that I'm puzzled. He holds up his wrist so I can see his watch, points to it and says, "You're 10 minutes early, Mr. Weldon." "Well, Willie," I say, "listen, if you're not early, you're late, so I plan on being 10 minutes early for my appointments." "Well, so do I, Mr. Weldon. And now that we've got that extra 10 minutes and the 20 minutes I added to the driving time, that gives you 30 minutes for a mini tour. There's very little traffic today and no construction delays. What do you say? We go to Graceland." "Okay, Willie, let's go." And off we go for a side tour of Graceland. On the way, Willie tells me some intriguing stories about Elvis Presley and his family and the many stars that he had taxied to Graceland over the years before Elvis died. as we head back to the airport with a Graceland bumper sticker and a portrait of Elvis, and of course plenty of time to spare for my flight, I think again of Willie's answer to my question about the beat-up exterior of his taxi. He was able to mentally separate all the things he could control and was responsible for from the things and conditions he couldn't control and wasn't responsible for. Think how much time, effort, and energy the ordinary salesperson spends complaining and worrying, griping about competitors, traffic, interest rates, taxes, email, voicemail, the government, the weather, company policy, and pricing. Hey, let's remember, most salespeople can't control any of those things. They're not responsible for them. You can be interested because you're affected by them, but you're not responsible. The more time and energy you spend on the things beyond your control, the less time you have for the things you can control and are totally responsible for. Things like your attitude, your level of concern, your commitments, your knowledge, your skill, and your personal growth. Those are your responsibilities every day. Willie Cooley knew that. How about you? Well, as we pull up to the American Airlines departure area, Willie again leaps out of the car, opens my door, and retrieves my two bags. Standing there with my wallet in my hand, I said, "Well, how much do I owe you this time, Willie?" With a big smile, he says, $10.50, Mr. Weldon. $10.50, Willie? No, that's what you charged me yesterday, and we didn't go on the Graceland tour. Mr. Weldon, the trip to Graceland was on me. As I told you yesterday, it's someplace special you needed to see while you were here in Memphis. Just a little extra, so you can tell your daughters about it. Well, looking in my wallet, I saw the other $20 bill. I thought for just a moment, and then, of course, I gave him the whole $20. Well, keep the change, Willie, I said. What would you have done? Well, Willie thanked me graciously, put it in his wallet. You know, I still had plenty of time to check in, so I said to him, Willie, you know, you're an amazing guy. I've never met anybody quite like you. Tell me, how do you stay so positive and enthusiastic? Again, he smiled. He moved a little closer to me so nobody could hear. Oh, Mr. Weldon, I just love what I do, and everything just seems to work out for me. You know, right now, behind that fence, are dozens of cabbies sitting and complaining about how bad business is, how high gas prices are, how bad the taxi company owners are, and not one of them is thinking of ways to get better. You know, I have a mission statement for what I do. I said, well, what is it, Willie? Well, Willie smiles that toothless smile and says, well, Mr. Weldon, I call it the Willie Factor. It's 6 words, 26 letters, and it's the reason I've been so successful. And if you use it and then share it with your seminar audiences, you and they will be a lot more successful too. Well, I couldn't wait to hear what it was. Well, what is it, Willie? Looking me right in the eye, he says, all you need to do to be highly successful in almost any business is to focus on your customer and make sure that you promise a lot, deliver even more. Wow, I thought. Oh, how true, how simple, how powerful. And then I wrote down those 6 words, 26 letters, promise a lot, deliver even more. Willie then took out his appointment book and started to say something about his regular pickups, looked at his watch and then said, oh, Mr. Weldon, you'll have to excuse me. I've got more business waiting. Hope to see you on your next trip to Memphis. And with that, Mr. Willie Cooley, professional businessman, cab driver extraordinaire, drove away, gone, but not forgotten. Quite a person, quite an experience, and certainly a powerful image of professionalism and creativity in selling. Want more business? Then be a Willie Cooley and promise a lot, deliver even more. It's true. Make big commitments. Fill them all. And then give a little extra, like the bonus ride to Graceland, like telling me 1:30 and being there at 1:15. Well, Willie was gone, but certainly not forgotten. And little did I know that this wonderful, joyful, enthusiastic man would become a major influence in my life and my career, and that before long, we would meet again. So let's complete this first message with some specific suggestions for you. Number one, think like a customer. Make TLC a daily part of your selling activity. Just stop and say to yourself, what's my customer's viewpoint? How do they feel about this or that? What do I have that will meet their needs, solve their problem, or just make them a little more comfortable? TLC. Spend a day, a half a day, or just a few hours in their business, looking, listening, and learning. Attend their meetings. Study their industry. Read their trade publications. Why? So you can think like your customer. Number two, evaluate yourself. When you're sitting in a taxi cab, when you're the passenger, the buyer, the prospect, or the customer, look inward and determine what you're thinking and feeling and what you really mean by what you're saying to that salesperson. And then number three, study salespeople. Like a research scientist would study some unknown substance. Look at every aspect of your time with them. Pick up on all the good things they do or say. Make note of the things that turn you off and annoy you, frustrate you, or are just plain unprofessional. Then instead of just being critical of what that salesperson did, ask yourself, how could you have handled it better? Focus on turning negatives into positives. Here's what I mean by that. Remember when Willie first picked me up at the airport, leaped out of his taxi, said hello, and asked me, are these your bags? You know, that seemed a bit much. I mean, I was standing right next to the bags. There was no one else around. But you know, some weeks later, as I was thinking about Willie, the salesman, it hit me why he probably asked that question. I theorized that at some point in his 22 years of driving a taxi, he must have picked up a passenger on a busy day, grabbed the bags at the curb, and took off for their destination, only to find out later that he had picked up the wrong bag or missed a bag, and somehow he messed up his passenger's trip. I could just see this wonderful man heartbroken over his mistake and thinking that night as he lay in his bed, how do I make sure I never do that again? And the answer, the simple answer coming to him in one four-word sentence, are these your bags? Oh, what a great aha! So whenever you make a mistake, goof up, or let somebody down in some way, ask yourself, what can I do to make sure that I never do that again? Your answer will help you progress to the next level in your profession. You can learn so much from studying those who sell and service you, both the great and the not so great. And that's how you can make the Willie factor pay off big for you, because your customers will be thrilled.
This is the end of message number one. For your convenience, the tracks have been placed exactly 6 minutes apart on each of your Sell It with a $1 Million Attitude CD.